Welcome back to the FKT podcast. I'm your host, Heather Anderson. Today I'm joined by Anton Krupicka, who recently set the unsupported FKT for the rugged LA freeway route on Colorado's Continental Divide. Tune in and hear all about this 34-mile off-trail route that combines technical scrambling with extended time at altitude. Thank you so much, Anton, for coming on the show today to talk about your FKTs.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me on, Heather. That's a podcast that I listen to regularly, and yeah, I'm excited to chat.
So when I was looking into your FKTs this year, you had two that were really close to each other, both kind of centering around Long's Peak, or Long's Peak was a feature. So I'm wondering if, first of all, you could talk a little bit about the role Long's Peak played in your training this year, because it sounds like you were up that mountain a lot.
Yeah, so here in Boulder, which is where I live, Long's Peak is the nearest 14er. It also happens to be, in my opinion, the highest quality 14er in the state. That's obviously a subjective opinion, but it's, I think, the most technical 14er in Colorado. And that's mostly due to the diamond being kind of the most important alpine big wall in the country, I would say. And there's not really an easy route up Longs. The easiest is kind of the tourist trade route, the keyhole route. Even that has some third class and some exposure on it. And certainly in the wintertime, even the keyhole route is kind of an accomplishment. It's steep snow slopes on it with exposure over cliffs. And so I've always felt that getting to the summit of Longs by any means is, it's just one of those things like, I did something today. It's an accomplishment no matter what. Whereas most of the 14ers in the state, some of them might be quite long, a lot of vert, but they're mostly just hikes or runs. Longs requires some technical skill almost by any route. That's what makes me appreciate it the most. At the beginning of the summer, I set as a goal for this year the LA Freeway, which is a traverse on the Continental Divide from Longs Peak in Rocky Mountain National Park to the Arapaho Peaks in the Indian Peaks Wilderness, just to the south of Rocky Mountain. Those are the two high points of those two jurisdictions. And you're on the Continental Divide the entire way. It's about 34 miles with 18,000 feet of vertical. You summit, I think, 24 peaks along the way. And so I started lapping Longs really in early June just to start getting acclimated to the altitude. It's the easiest access for proper alpine scrambling on technical rock. And it's the start of the LA Freeway, so it's a natural choice.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I have been up the tourist route, as you call it.
maybe I do mean to diminish it, but that's the tourist route. You know, it's in a national park.
Yeah.
And so it's extremely popular.
Yeah.
And people get into trouble on it because, you know, people want to go up the highest mountain, but it's not just a walk up like most of the 14ers in the state.
Yeah, I definitely saw more people turning around than I did going to the top.
Sure.
And so I've been on that route, and then you set an FKT on the Keener's route, and I was trying to figure out, is part of the Keener's route the start of the LA Freeway? Is that kind of...
No, so
you mentioned the cables in both, so that's why I wasn't sure.
Yeah, so the keyhole route tries to find kind of like the line of weakness up the mountain, so it spirals around the backside from the East Longs Peak trailhead, which is the main trailhead for Longs. But the fastest way, the shortest way up and down the mountain is the old cables route on the north face, which is just right on the edge of the diamond. And there's about, I don't know, probably a 200-foot, two pitches of low fifth class scrambling. But the thing that's challenging about the cables is that dihedral is there because of freeze thaw, and it's always wet. And it's dry for maybe a week out of the summer, usually in like late July or early August. But it's relatively low angle. So I climb it year round, like a down climbed it this morning because I went up Keener's this morning, actually. Keener's is the classic mountaineering route on the mountain, I would say, because the traditional way to do it, you climb a snow couloir and then you traverse this ledge called Broadway, which is very exposed, but technically not that difficult. And then you skirt the left side of the diamond on the actual Keener's route, which is a series of cracks and chimneys at about 5.4. And that takes you to the summit. So that's like the next step up from doing cables, I would say, in terms of technical difficulty and just like how complex it is, because there's a lot of different kinds of terrain on it. So Keno's is a very classic mountaineering route. Cables is the fastest route. So the overall FKT on Lolox Peak is done via the cables. And Keno's is just another super classic route that I feel deserves to have fast times recorded on it.
Got it. And so was your Keener's FKT that you did just a couple weeks prior, was that your big last training push before you did the LA Freeway, or?
I have never gone up to Long's Peak with the intention of running hard. It's just like if I get to the parking lot, jog around a little bit, see how the legs are feeling, and then start up the trail if the legs are feeling good, because it's steep pretty immediately. Then I'll stick with the effort and go hard and try and go fast. And so every time that I logged a personal best this summer or an FKT like on Keener's, it was almost random. You know, I mean, it's not, because usually my legs feel good because I've taken the couple, 3 days a little easier before it or something. I mean, for Keener's, for instance, I had gone up with my girlfriend Haley the day before and I'd felt terrible. Just no energy, just not feeling great at altitude, no motivation. But I just went back up the next day because it was good weather, and I don't know, it just became my default this summer, and I ended up feeling really good. I find, especially at altitude, it can be pretty unpredictable how you're going to feel. And for me, I find, especially for hard efforts at altitude, I can't force it. So if I go in with the intention of going as hard as I can, I usually overreach too soon, and then you get anaerobic and the whole effort's kind of ruined. You know, you didn't pace correctly. So if I ease into it a little more and just listen to my body, that's usually when my best efforts occur.
I think there's definitely a lot of validity to that, because I feel like anytime I go to altitude, it seems like a complete unknown. What's going to happen? Am I going to feel great, or am I going to be throwing up? Which way is this going to go? You know?
100%. That's. I mean, this summer I've been feeling very good at altitude because I've been spending so much time there, but I've had that experience too, where I thought I was very acclimated and I just had a terrible day at altitude for no seemingly good reason.
Right. So switching gears to the LA Freeway, so you start out here and you go up the cables for LA Freeway, and then you're going to traverse this 34 miles on the divide. Are you ever on trail, or is it all basically third, fourth class? What's the percentage breakdown there?
So the fastest way up Longs, or my fastest way up Longs, there's about a quarter to a half mile stretch where I take the main trail, just long straightaway. And then I guess another about quarter to half mile on the final descent off of South Arapaho Peak, I'm on trail. Other than that, you don't even cross a trail except for a Buchanan Pass and Pawnee Pass. So what is usually the high point for people's hikes, like these passes, they're the low points on the route, actually. So yeah, it's essentially all off trail, like 99.5%.
That's an impressive distance to be on all off trail.
Yeah, I would say that is one of the main challenges of the route, is just the persistently technical footing. Even when you're on tundra, like the grass up there, as I'm sure you're aware, it's kind of like running on tennis balls or something. You know, it's very uneven. It's super easy to roll an ankle. There's usually embedded rocks amongst the grass. But most of it is, I would say, class two or three talus and boulders, and then several sections of fourth class, and then a handful of sections of fifth class.
Mm. And how would you rate the fifth class?
5.4, 5.5. Okay. Yeah. And there's probably about 10 pitches, actually, that are that around there. I personally really enjoy climbing and scrambling, and in that pursuit, style is kind of everything. So I sort of intentionally took the most direct, which meant more fifth class climbing routes in a lot of the sections. One example is the Cleaver Notch before Isolation Peak, which is about, for me, it was like 4 hours into the day. And that you can do, I've never even scouted it, but I know most of the other people who've done the freeway, they'll take kind of a third class ledge and then climb up this gully that's a little bit out of the way. But to stay on the ridge, if you just do this one pitch of like 5.5, and then you're back on third class scrambling, you just climb directly out of the notch and you're on the ridge. It's much more direct and logical, and I like that.
So for this route in particular, did you carry any sort of rappel gear or special gear at all? Or were you down climbing fifth class, or just trying to go up fifth and down climb something a little lower?
Yeah, the only fifth class down climbing that I can think of is on Pagoda, which is the second peak just after Longs. And the most direct way would be to go down the West Ridge, which has probably a pitch of like 5-6 slab you'd have to down climb. And I scouted that. I've up climbed it a handful of times. I've never down climbed it. And I just decided that there's a workaround you can do, like a zigzag on a couple of ledges that only require some minimal fifth class down climbing, and more like 5.0 or 5.2, something like that. And so no rappel kit. But yeah, that would be the spot, I guess, where people, if you did stay on the West Ridge of Pagoda, then you would rappel that one pitch. But it's pretty silly to carry, you know, even a 30-meter cord for...
for one thing.
Yeah, for 30-plus miles.
Right. So you mentioned a couple of things that you've scouted and a couple of things you didn't. How much of this route had you seen before you went out there? How much of this were you on-sighting?
The only part I was on-sighting was most of the tundra running in the first half. So the way the route works out is, what I think of as the first half, even though it's over halfway distance-wise, is Long's Peak to Buchanan Pass. And once you get past Isolation Peak, where there's that pitch of 5.5, there's a lot of pretty wide open, you're always above 12,000 feet, usually bopping between 12 and 13K. I don't know how many miles exactly, but for at least an hour and a half probably, you're running on this high tundra. And then the second half is where the highest concentration of more technical scrambling is.
When you're nice and tired.
Yeah, it's funny because... I don't know. It's never made sense in my head. It's called the LA Freeway, so Long Shore Arapahoe. And it just definitely makes the most sense in my head to go that direction, even though for sure you're having to focus more at the end when you've been out for hours and hours. And yeah, you're just, not only are there like fifth class pitches, but there's a lot of third and fourth class too.
I guess maybe there's something to be said for, you're going to be moving a little slower in that terrain. So maybe it's nice to be doing that when you've already maximized, when you're fresh, when you're on stuff that's a little smoother.
Yeah.
I think I saw this in your troop report. You mentioned that it was ankle roll terrain. And you rolled your ankle while you were out there?
Yeah, I mean, both of them. I rolled my right one twice and my left one once, I think. I've spent a lot of time on that kind of terrain this summer. So I've rolled both ankles multiple times this summer. And so they're weak, and you know how ankles are. They're so much easier to retweak once you roll them badly the first time. I don't know. I feel like over 13 hours and a 50K that many times is not doing too badly, actually.
Right. Not enough to slow you down, obviously.
Yeah. I was lucky in that they were never so terrible. I could kind of walk them off.
Yeah. So why did you choose to do this unsupported? I think I saw that there are people who've set up caches out there because water access is an issue. Can you talk a little bit about water and why you chose unsupported?
Yeah, so there's no easy way to access the route other than the start and finish. You know, the two logical access points, like I mentioned earlier, Buchanan Pass and Pawnee Pass, and those are both, well, one is like 11,800 feet and the other one's 12.5. And so they're long hikes in. Even if you're going to be dropping a cache or somewhere they're going to meet you, you're like asking a lot of that person. So, and it's short enough, it's a long 50K, that it's possible to carry all your food from the start. So to me, it just felt like the most logical style. And anytime you can do something unsupported, that feels like the most pure, cleanest style. And in this case, I don't think it really slows you down that much. I started with 5,000 calories and I had given up on going for it this summer because earlier in August, I'd been up there on a scouting run and all the usual springs and pools had completely dried up because we were really dry in June and July. But in August, it rained for about 3 weeks and it was enough to replenish the three spots that I needed to be able to do it. Got lucky. But yeah, I'd totally given up on being able to do it this year as a result. And because I knew it could be done unsupported, I just wasn't willing to commit to any half measures. Like, I wanted to do it unsupported.
Yeah. There's something I think about doing something so long on an off trail. I mean, this is just super remote. You're just out there. I think there's just something really perfect about doing it unsupported. It just complements that remoteness and that commitment to being on the divide for so long. So you said the places you needed water had water. How much water were you carrying? You said you carried your food. So how much water did you carry at one time? And overall, how much weight were you carrying?
I never weighed my vest, but I had a race vest and then a belt. And I had three flasks. Each flask was 650 mils. what is that, 22 ounces? I'm not sure. So basically, I have the capacity for 2 liters. I started with just one flask full because the first fill spot was about 2,500 feet up the hill. I'm just like, well, I don't need to carry 2 liters from the very start. I'll just dip from the first stream, you know? But then, yeah, so carried 2 liters. And then when I got to the first refill, I chugged 1.3 liters, so 2 flasks, and then filled all 3. And by the time I got to the next refill spot, I was ready for water. It wasn't dire, but I, again, like drank 2 flasks, filled all 3. And then at the last refill, there's a little tarn up there. I didn't drink any extra. I just filled 2 flasks and kept going. So I stopped for like 30 seconds there, whereas the other places I'd stop for like 3 minutes because I was busy drinking. I started with 5,000 calories, but I only ended up eating, because I mean, I went a couple hours faster than I've been planning on going, and I only ended up eating a bit over 3,000 calories, I think. I felt like I was just trying to eat as much as I could. I wasn't trying to skimp on calories. I mean, getting as many carbs in as you can right now is all the rage, and it, obviously, your body needs energy.
Right. And were you doing predominantly liquid calories? What were you eating?
Gels. Yeah. Right. I almost predominantly gels, and then I had one, a Pro Bar. You know, that was my midday lunch.
Ours for lunch.
Yeah. And that was it. Yeah. Everything else was gels. Yeah.
Okay. Earlier at the very beginning, we were talking about how you go into it and you kind of maybe ease into these things. And you just mentioned you were a couple hours faster. I know you went out into this project, I'm sure, trying to do it quickly. But was the FKT your goal? Were you just going out there to see how it unfolded? Were you surprised by your pace? Was there a moment where you're like, oh, I'm going to do this FKT? How did that kind of mentally unfold?
My approach to it sort of evolved over the course of the summer. At the beginning of the summer, this had just been a route that I'd been wanting to do for a dozen years. And so I was like, I'm excited to just complete it this summer. If I can go fast enough to break the record on it, great. But that wasn't necessarily my highest priority. But over the course of the summer, as the summer went on, I started realizing, I don't know, probably some of the best fitness of my life, actually. So I very much wanted to break the FKT by the time I actually went for it. And a buddy of mine, he'd been training for it all summer as well, a local guy here in Boulder. And oh, in late July, before everything dried up, he went for it. And he was going fast. He was probably at like 15 and a half hour pace, but he got stormed off with, you know, half a dozen peach left. But he made it a long ways at definitely sub FKT pace. And that gave me extra motivation to like, well, you're fit enough. You got to try and go fast if you don't want Joe to just come back next year and take the time back. Obviously, he can go 15 hours. And the record was 16 and a half. So yeah, that gave me extra motivation. And also, I mean, I'm 41. And I have spent, I don't know, the last 5 to 10 years, especially the last 5 years, I feel like my best fitness is behind me. And this whole summer has been this very unexpected peak in fitness. And I guess I wanted to just make the most of having good legs and honor that. And I've always been interested in going fast. And I think it puts you in a completely different mindset, headspace, than if you're just out at a submaximal effort. And I really enjoy that headspace. I really enjoy the focus and presence required and the intensity of it. I think it makes for a much more memorable experience overall. And a fast time at the end is just a byproduct of wanting to inhabit that focus and intensity.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You mentioned Joe got stormed off. What was your weather like? Because, I mean, you're on the divide and weather happens up there.
Yeah. I mean, you're bouncing between 12 and 14K all day. My buddy Joe Kennedy, he had terrible weather, or he had great weather until a classic, unforecasted afternoon monsoon, super intense storm blew in on the divide. And he had just hail, lightning, had to get out of there. I had perfect weather. It was amazing. Almost no wind, a little bit warm, but not terrible, and barely a cloud the entire time.
Wow.
So, yeah, I couldn't have asked for better weather.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I've seen some pretty nasty storms up there that do seem to come out of nowhere.
Yeah, basically, I was checking the forecast, and it's like, okay, this is the week I got to do it. This is the best day of this week, you know, and it turned out perfect. This happened to be on a Saturday, but I have the luxury of being able to do it on it whenever the weather is good. You know, I can go in the middle of the week. So, yeah, it's definitely an advantage.
Yeah, that makes a huge difference, being able to pick your weather window. obviously this is pretty remote, but other people are out there doing it. Did you see anyone else out on the route?
So it's actually called Isolation Peak, and for good reason. It's way out there. There was actually a person on that summit, which that was my third time this summer being on that peak, and I'd never seen anyone out there before. Super odd. But then there's a mountain, Mount Toll, which is in the Indian Peaks, and one of the more technical mountains on the route. The North Ridge is fifth class, so that's the way I go. And exactly as I got to the base of the North Ridge, a search and rescue helicopter was lowering off a first aid responder to rescue some climbers that were stuck on a ledge on the route that I was about to climb. And so the timing was incredible. And I was kind of like, actually kind of worried because, you know, helicopters, the propellers kick up some significant wind and super gusty blowing you around. And it's real fifth class climbing. And like, I don't want this helicopter to blow me off the mountain right now.
Right. Yeah. That's terrible timing.
but that was pretty much it. Yeah. That was it. Yeah.
So they were on that same route. Like, did you actually go by them?
They must have been a little off route or something. That's maybe why they were stuck. But I came within a couple dozen yards of them. And I was like, oh, they're over there. And I don't know. They didn't seem stuck to me, but whatever. You know, people have different comforts and abilities and whatever. So, yeah, I did not climb directly past them, though.
Okay. Yeah. I was just thinking that would be really kind of funny to be calling for a rescue and then just this guy in a running vest comes just right by you off the mountain.
Yeah. They were probably preoccupied. And it felt super chaotic with the helicopter there, too.
I was
scrambling as quickly as I could to get through the whole town because it just seemed, I didn't want to be a part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So that kind of brings up a good point about safety and navigation. Obviously, you'd seen a lot of the route. Did you have like maps, GPS line? How are you navigating? And then also, did you have an inReach? Did you have some sort of safety plan?
I mean, my safety plan, there's actually pretty decent service on, I don't know, I would say half the route. So I had my phone, I had a Garmin inReach. And that was tracking. And then navigation came down to putting in reconnaissance. You know, I've scouted it for the past decade. I hadn't been up there for the past 4 years until this summer. And there was one technical zone from Algonquin to Paiute that I had not seen in 5 years. But everything else was like pretty fresh for me. The last scouting run I did a 31-mile run just 4 days before I went for it, actually. And that was through the most technical part. And so that was really nice to get to, you know, maybe I'm 10 hours in and it's the most consistently or sustainably technical portion of the whole ridge. But I had just seen it 4 days before. So it all felt super fresh in my mind, which is really nice. Maybe I wasn't the best tapered, but I think tapers are overrated.
Is there anything else you'd like to share about this FKT or how your summer preparing for it went that I haven't asked?
No, I mean, I think you got great questions. I guess the only thing is, it's the backyard skyline, so there's huge motivation and connection to it for me personally. But it's a great route. I'm not necessarily calling for there to be more action on it. Like, people can do whatever they want, but it's worthy. It's world class, I think. If you're comfortable in that zone of ultra distance, but with legitimate fifth class scrambling, it's about as good as it gets for a healthy mix of both.
It sounds like it.
Yeah, it's really cool. I think it's one of the coolest things out there. I'm really satisfied to have finally done it, given the kind of effort that I have always thought it deserved and to have it go well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today and sharing about that experience. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course.
Thanks again, Anton, for coming on the show. You can read about his FKTs on the website, fastestknowntime.com, and follow his adventures on Instagram at Anton Krupichka.